We have got a great Shitcoin Insider for you guys today. Welcome back to the show. If you missed our first three episodes, don't forget to subscribe, as these were not posted on the Bitcoin Audible feed, but we had an excellent time with episode one, digging into the token printing mess that is DeFi. We covered the various smells of the Bitcoin forks in episode two, and then dove into the consequences of the move fast and break things mentality in Ethereum with the help of Udi Wertheimer in episode 3. And now, on the dawn of an SEC indictment, a filing full of dirty, unethical tactics, the exchange delistings of XRP, the price crash, and the alignment of Jupiter, it's time to take a closer look at Ripple. My co-host is back for this one, and we have another anonymous guest today who will be known as Max, but he has been working in the industry for many years and has done quite a bit of research around Ripple. Before we dive in, I want to thank the team over at the Hexa Mobile Wallet, a great wallet to hold your keys on mobile and for just general day-to-day Bitcoin use. Also, Level.co for mobile Bitcoin banking services, and an exchange with no trading fees. And then lastly, the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet for your secure, simple, and elegant Bitcoin cold storage solution. You can check out all of these awesome products at guyswan.com. And with that, let's get into today's chat with our Shitcoin insiders. This is episode 4. The Ripple Effect. Bitcoin maximalists trying to make sense of the sea of shitcoins. This is Shitcoin Insider. We have got two insiders. We've got our co-host back today. Welcome. Thank you. I'm glad. Are you still undercover? Or
I am very undercover.
Very undercover. Okay. Well, I'm glad you found a quiet little corner so that you could join us back on the show. It is good to have you back, sir. And we have another insider, one who is a Ripple expert joining us, Max. Thank you for joining us, Max.
Hey, I'm happy to be here.
All right. So we are diving into Ripple. Is that Ripple the company? We got the company. We got the token, XRP. And they claim they're two different things. SEC claims otherwise. And there is just an unbelievable mountain of crap around this. And I'm absolutely stoked. I am stoked that we are diving into this. First off, Max, why don't you introduce yourself however much you are? I know you're also undercover, so we don't want to spill too many beans, but tell us who you are and what you know about Ripple.
Yeah, so I am a software engineer and I develop Bitcoin wallets. I've been working in the industry for about 2 to 3 years now. And, you know, I came across Ripple pretty early on, and it actually piqued my interest at first before I really, really dove in and was able to kind of figure out what was going on there. So a lot of my knowledge came from the early times where, you know, I thought that Ripple might be, you know, the revolutionary technology that they were marketing themselves to be. So, you know, admittedly, there was a point in time where I did think that it was pretty compelling stuff. But, you know, I guess throughout time, you learn more and more and, you know, your opinions change. So here we are today.
We all dabbled a little bit in shitcoins.
Yep, definitely.
Co-host over there. Did you ever dabble in Ripple? Did you ever go?
I mean, I did not. I did, you know, in 2017 when I saw it was on its little run, I speculated there, but I never believed in the Ripple. It, you know, it was pretty clear as far as shitcoins go, to me anyway, at all times, that it didn't seem to have a future. Yeah. It was one of those coins, actually, you know, regulators for a long time, or lawmakers, when they looked at Bitcoin, when they first heard about Bitcoin, of course, like, their first instinct was like, well, go turn it off. Like,
yeah,
go turn that thing off. Like, that's, like, we don't want people making their own money. Like, that's dangerous. People are going to get scammed. Go turn it off. Tell them no. It's obviously illegal. Right. And then they had to be told by smarter people, well, you can't turn it off. It's called a blockchain. It's decentralized. Sorry, but we can't turn it off. And, you know, it took them a while to figure this out, but they, you know, they trusted the smarter people and they said, oh, okay. So now you got stuff like Ripple, which is straight up scam, basically, which without Bitcoin, the regulators or lawmakers would have just said, hey, go turn it off. And they would have turned it off. But now they're confused by Bitcoin and they're like, oh, this must be one of those blockchain things. I guess we can't turn it off. But but in the case of Ripple, they need to, like, you know, they have to, it's not Bitcoin. And you absolutely can turn it off. So,
oh, I'm muted. it seems to be actually pretty easy to turn it off. I mean, as soon as they filed their did their filing, they've turned off like 80% of its value, pretty quick. But holy crap, some of the stuff in this. But I really want to get into it, because I've just got like bullet point after bullet point of some of the stuff in this filing. But so this is, though, just in a general idea, particularly for people who maybe are just kind of trying to figure out what the hell Ripple is. So this is basically, it is a blockchain, right? Like, it is a copy pasta of Bitcoin code.
So Max, it's,
yeah, break that down for us.
Yeah, so Ripple is not a Bitcoin fork. It was kind of developed from scratch. It's different from the Ethereum account-based model. It's different from the Bitcoin-based UTXO model.
Okay, so it's not.
So UTXO. Ripple and Stellar are the two kind of in their little special league there, and it's kind of its own thing. So. Yeah, it's not a Bitcoin clone or anything like that.
Is there what's the quote unquote consensus model that they're using? Is it like a proof of stake sort of thing?
No, it's not. It's actually, the algorithm is called consensus, and it's very simplified kind of model where it's really just ordering transactions based on their timestamp. So the way the network decides, or the way the network prevents double spends, is literally just looking at the timestamps of the transactions. And if one transaction happened before another one, or the second transaction is a double spend, they will just eliminate that transaction altogether. So their consensus mechanism is very, very simplified. And it's because they weren't really focusing on things like censorship resistance. Mm-hmm. They were focused a lot more on things like throughput and performance.
Well, it seems like that would be really easy to just, like, as soon as you have like a couple of adversaries in the network, like, I mean, you basically need a trusted source of information, because, I mean, the timestamps aren't reliable. I mean, that's like something known in Bitcoin, is that, you know, you have to have that gap of like an hour or 2 hours, whatever it is, of being able to accept a timestamp, because you just never know, like, the accuracy of a timestamp. You know, like, we have blocks that actually come after another block in Bitcoin that has an earlier timestamp. Rare, but, you know, nonetheless, like, so how do they deal with adversaries? How do you deal with an attack?
So every node has kind of like a configuration of trusted nodes that it listens to. It's called the UNL. I think it's the Unified Node List. Mm-hmm. And At first, this, or actually not at first, even still to this day, it's a list that Ripple Inc. maintains. And so when you download a Ripple node, it comes pre-configured with a list of nodes to only peer to, and those are the nodes that have been blessed by Ripple as legitimate. And so that is the main mechanism for basically preventing adversaries and dealing with that type of thing.
So if there actually is, like if one of those approved nodes lies, like there is nothing. We're just trusting that they're not going to do that.
Yeah, I assume Ripple would remove them from the list and they would basically just be banished from the network.
Interesting. So they developed a new method using trusted third parties to achieve consensus.
Well, really, it's what we already had before.
No, I know.
It's no different than, you know.
That's the bad joke.
Yeah.
And one thing is that's interesting is that Ripple claims that, you know, you could configure your node however you want, which is true. You can configure your node however you want and to peer to whoever you want. But there's really no evidence that anybody on the network is doing that, yeah, like whatsoever. So
do you guys remember just about maybe a year ago, somebody made an app for Ripple? Maybe it was a year and a half ago. And the Ripple blockchain, just like you can on some other big blockchains like BSV and whatever. And they actually like threatened to ban this guy from the network because they said that his app was like destructive, and they like the node, the validators like ordered him to like take down his GitHub and like, you know, not do that.
Good God. That's amazing. I mean, not surprising at all. I don't think I knew about it. One thing I find really interesting about that is, well, obviously you've not got a permissionless network, right? Like, is it, if you don't do something that the owners of the network, or if you do something that the owners of the network don't like, or, you know, you build something that they're like,
the network too much to me, yeah. It proved it. I mean, it already kind of knew, but it was just proof that, you know, they built something that doesn't actually even scale. I mean, one of the great things about Bitcoin is we know what it looks like when you pound it to the max. Like you could put Fortnite levels of people on Bitcoin tomorrow. Granted, they won't all get their transaction through in the next 24 hours, but like the network's still going to go through, and whoever does, you know, play by the rules, in other words, whoever does bid the best rate for their transaction is going to be processed in the next 10 minutes. The network's going to work just fine. The people who pay for the privilege of getting on the any block space are going to get it. And, you know, and we know it's like, we know it's going to happen. The network is designed, it works very well, even under extreme load. I mean, as long as you don't mind to pay, that's another, you know, that's why it works. But, with Ripple and so many other networks, they don't even like, they, if you actually use them to the extent that they're configured to allow you to use them, like they would literally stop working. They would crash. They are like marketing facades. They are like a paper castle built to look like a real castle to attract tourist volumes to get the same ticket price that a real castle gets. but they hope that they don't actually have to be used as a castle, though, because if they do, like, you're going to find out really quick that, you know, it's not one.
Yeah, it still blows my mind that even to this day after, well, like, you know, we had the episode about BSV and stuff about how, like, they had, what was it, 10 megabytes or 20 megabyte blocks? Like, something that was a bare fraction of what they claim they should be able to do, and that it took like 11 or 12 minutes. It took time just to download and validate the block, just to compute the validity of what was in the block, so that everybody basically just, if they were validating, they were going to immediately start falling behind. Like there was, you couldn't even catch up with the network. And if they weren't validating, well, then
nobody's validating, and you don't have any decentralization or security. You have no idea what you're doing. You're just trusting somebody else again. And Ripple is a great example of this. In fact, there was a really great thread that I saved. The NUDB. Do you know what the NU stands for by chance, Max?
I'm not sure.
Okay, it's like the name of XRP's database or something like that. He just kept using NUDB, and I never actually figured out what that was. But their blockchain essentially is 9 terabytes.
Sounds about right.
And that was in December 2018. So 2 years later. Two extra years is 9 terabytes. The entire state could be 18 terabytes or more, but basically we don't have full nodes that are with technically the entire thing. But just massive amounts of data. And there's actually like a, like kind of an explorer, like a XRP chart thing that just shows that more than half of the nodes, even though there's like so few nodes, more than half of them are unstable. Like they don't stay in sync and they don't actually operate. Like you can't request information from them and know that you're getting back decent information. Yep. Like it might not be caught up in sync, can't validate, like that sort of thing.
You can't, even the ones that are in sync, they're missing a lot of early data. And I think that Max probably will go into this, but they lost their history at one point and they had to kind of like fake it back.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, I know there's like some things on that, like even now today, maybe like the first 30,000 blocks or something, you just...
Yeah, no, the history is not like they don't, there's a blackout spot where they just trust because they don't know what happened.
That's it's beautiful. Lost. That's beautiful. Yeah, Max, so, do you have details on this?
Yeah, so first of all, yeah, a lot of these nodes are not in sync. If you look at the list of nodes on the network, and I haven't tried to run a Ripple node myself, mainly because I don't have 10 terabytes of storage laying around. But I have heard from people at Coinmetrics that it's like incredibly difficult to run a Ripple node. And, you know, Ethereum gets a ton of flack for this as well. But, you know, according to people who actually have hands-on experience with this, it's even more difficult to run a Ripple node. So as far as the missing blocks go, Ripple, they're actually called ledgers. And so it's like every second, or I'm not sure like how quickly it updates, it's very quick. They call it this is the new ledger. They're missing tens of thousands of ledgers in the early days of the network, and funny enough, those missing ledgers are around the time that XRP was being doled out to the founders and being given to Ripple Inc. And it seems to be that a lot of people believe that there was full-on like network resets going on, where like all of the coins were just being reset, and basically Ripple Inc. got 80 billion of the 100 billion coins, and then the two founders, Jed McCaleb and Chris Larson, got the remaining 20 billion XRP tokens. And I guess one of the running theories is that this allotment happened during that blackout period. And now the CTO of Ripple, David Schwartz, says that it was actually just a software bug and that there's nothing to worry about, and that anybody running a Ripple node today, I believe he said, that it's that it's basically unimportant, or that they, you know, that those block blanked out ledgers are of no significance or important to a user today.
It seems like those would, be the prime blocks, or excuse me, the most important ledgers to not be able to audit, particularly during an SEC lawsuit.
I wouldn't be surprised if that does, you know, become a point of interest there. So yeah, it is true that it is impossible to do like a full audit on the like Ripple ledger history, because there are points in time where there's just flat out missing state. So
it's not even, it's the most important time. It's like the origin of it. So what happened? Where did this come from? Who made it? Who owned it? It's like, oh, well, that information isn't important. Trust us. It was fine.
Yeah. It kind of speaks to, I think, the disconnect between like Ripple and the rest of the space. Like, it seems like they're missing like a lot of like the ethos, or like a lot of like the things that like make this special. And like to come out and say that like all of these missing ledgers, you know, well, you know, it's just part of our system or whatever. It's like, it just seems like, you know, like, well, that's kind of like part of the whole point. And if you're like just kind of brushing it under the rug.
Yeah, you nailed it there. That's one of the reasons why I never, like, I guess, fell for it. Was because, like, you know, you do your little initial, when you're looking at all these new things, and you kind of do your little initial due diligence, like, you know, who got the early coins and what's the inflation and this, that, you know, your little shitcoin due diligence. And like Ripple failed immediately, like didn't even get past the first few like little due diligence markers before it's like, no, not touching this one.
Yeah, there's no like that. That's the one that just is so hard to understand. If people don't value like the beauty of Bitcoin, like what makes it so powerful is the fact that it's independent, is the fact that it provides these assurances that you own something based on a provable set of rules. And that requires, like, if you just drop the first, you know, 100,000 blocks of Bitcoin, we wouldn't know anything about any of the Bitcoin. All of it would be meaningless, because that's how we decide whether or not any of the rules were actually ever followed. If we just go back to a point where suddenly, well, you just can't check the rules anymore, well, then what is it? More than half of the Bitcoin supply, you know, that came out in the first, you know, the 50 reward blocks or whatever, is just, might as well just be just okay. Who owns them? Who got them? Were any of it fair? Were there ever a set of rules here that were followed for any reason whatsoever? We don't know. Like, all the assurances are gone. Everything else is just arbitrary, because you can't check it. You can't prove anything about what you're using. And then at the same time, is to say that your proof is, I'm going to check a couple of trusted nodes that Ripple told me to use. It's like, why even have the history there if you're A, trusting a group of people, and then you want to check the work after you ask them for the proof? And it's like, oh, well, don't even worry about where it came from. We just happen to not have the proof, but connect only to us and then trust us when we don't give you an answer. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's really hard for me to believe that there were not shenanigans going down. I mean, because as Max has said too, like, they never respected the crypto ethos. Like, to them, I think, like, these were, you know, Joel and them, these are technical guys that saw an opportunity to make money, and they executed a plan that made them money. And part of that plan included, like, well, we need to like change some of the, you know, initial distribution here. Well, okay, we just won't write that part down. You know what I mean? Like, what's the big deal? Discarded the point.
Well, this is this you make a point, is that you said they saw an opportunity to make money. This is the thing from the filing that was just amazing to me. First off, is that they asked, apparently there's a history of this, and they spoke with legal counsel about XRP, about doing this. And they were basically explicitly told that this is going to be an investment contract, and it will be it will be thought of as a security. And they went ahead and did it anyway. Now, there's, and in this, as you keep going through this SEC filing, you end up figuring out exactly why that was the case, is that they were broke. They completely lacked the funds. They had planned, they had started into all of these like endeavors and these projects, and they could not pay their business expenses. So back in 2013 and 2014, they had expenses of $25 million dollars that they could not cover before selling XRP. So they went ahead and did this. And literally ever since then, all they have, what they have done to fund their business expenses, was they use in so many different examples, it's just been selling XRP.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they did. So they were broke. They couldn't afford to continue with the projects that they started. So they invented an XRP token. As you said, they gave 80% to Ripple, the company, and then the rest to, I guess, the founders and Garlinghouse and, you know, whoever else was involved. Did Garlinghouse come in later or something? Because I know he got like $160 million worth.
Yeah, he came in later. He wasn't one of the founders of the company, but definitely owns a lot of XRP. Definitely has, you know, an interest in its price.
Yeah. But they just started selling it, and they've been paying everybody. They've been giving everybody XRP as payment because they don't have any money. So they just made their own money, and they've been using the hype and however much that they pulled in from this $1.3 billion sale of a shitcoin token that just came out of nowhere. And they've been using it to pump up and manipulate the price so that they can keep funding their operations. From 2014 through to the end of 2019, just to fund operations, Ripple sold 3.9 billion XRP for $763 million. Like, they just...
Yeah, and they're not even, you know, they come out and say, you know, we fund our operations through selling XRP. Like, it's not even like they're trying to hide the fact that that's, you know, the game that they're playing. It's, you know, they flat out said it publicly before any of this SEC stuff came out, that we make like basically all of our money, you know, through XRP sales. So
that's so crazy. And they have one of the things that I think was new, or at least, I mean, I think this is like pretty widely known that this is done all over the place in the shitcoin space. So many of the scammy altcoins, I mean, you could just see the Telegram groups or whatever, the pump and dump groups, just all over the place, right? Everybody's like, keep the price here. Let's everybody flood in. Let's make a whole lot of volume. I'll spread out some news, make some hype about it on social media and stuff, get all the noobs coming in, and then we can dump on them. And when you have these low liquidity, like really small, low volume tokens, it's really easy to do that with, you know, like 100, 200 people in a group that's, you know, where there's millions and millions of dollars moving around. It's really easy to manipulate these prices. Well, there are other things where people have basically said, no, what they're doing, and people that they were actually working with have spoken and explained that this was going on as well, is that they had four what they refer to as market sales specialists that were designed. They created a program. They just wrote a script or whatever. And the Ripple would literally just tell them, okay, like, let's make a price floor here. And then at the exact same time, they would then tell their marketing team to come up with some hype to post. They literally said, figure out something, whether you're taking some partnership or whatever that we already had from 6 months ago, spin it to make it sound new. Figure out how to push an update, whether it's arbitrary, come up with some sort of hype. Everybody start talking about it. Everybody start posting about it. Keep the price floor here with our market salespeople. And then let's pump it up, get lots of volume so that we can then dump again and continue funding. Like
Ripple pioneered the shitcoin PR and dump strategy that is now like imitated by so many other shitcoins that have in many cases come and gone. If you think of like IOTA, did it very well. But when you and I've had to do some marketing in the past in the blockchain space, and one of the things that are highly sought after, when you type on Google and you type anything with the word Ripple in it, and you get those little like news stories that appear under the search bar but not in the search results, those aren't ads. Those are syndicated news sources that Google is saying, okay, these are basically news sources that we trust talking about this thing. So here's what they have to say. And you can pay to be placed on those syndicated news lists. You're basically paying for stories. So when you type Ripple, probably even now, I don't know, I haven't checked in a while, you're going to see like, oh, Ripple is, Western Union is so great, and Ripple's with Western Union. You're going to see that now, obviously, because now you're going to see Western Union denied that they ever used Ripple technology and only dumped Ripple when they get it. So when you type in a shitcoin name and you see those big news blobs underneath, those are syndicated posts. Those are very valuable. And Ripple does a lot of that. I mean, they're probably spending millions of dollars a month on PR and marketing, but it's well worth it because they dump, what is it, $50 million every month? Or at least they were. I don't know if this is going to be impacted by the new legal trouble they're in, but mm-hmm. They're like the gold standard for this. And also, as somebody who I have to shamefully admit I have run bots before. I've run Twitter campaigns and all that stuff. I've been in the dirt. That's why I'm the shitcoin insider. I'm my hands are very dirty. But I'll tell you that whoever Ripple has on their payroll is like basically the world class of like Twitter botting and Telegram botting. And like it's whatever your shitcoin project would aspire to is basically what Ripple does, because they have it all. And it's very, when you know what to look for, especially when you've done it before and you know what you're like, they've got teams of people. I don't know, like maybe they've got some plausible liability between them and whoever they're hiring to do this. I would hope anyway, for their sake, but maybe they're not that smart. Who knows? Maybe it'll all come out one day. But they've got teams of people posting on Twitter. It's ridiculous. You can see the three people that have exposed it, where they'll show like 30 different Twitter accounts literally copy pasting the same narrative in response to people's posts about Ripple, like word for word, because that's what they're being paid to put out there. One of the new narratives is really really frustrating, because it's taking advantage of the goodwill of the crypto community in many ways, and to people that are like still naive, because crypto is new, so it potentially is very damaging. But the new narrative they're pushing now is that Bitcoin is China coin, and it's all Chinese, and Ripple is the American crypto blockchain. And so if you are a patriot, like you support Ripple, not this Chinese coin. Like China's trying to manipulate you into using their money. You want to use American money. Don't let those evil senators and lawmakers and policymakers try to stop our American ingenuity and innovation. Ripple, America.
Yeah, that's the one that Garlinghouse I've seen like has been posting like crazy, is that Bitcoin's just run by China. Ripple's at least run by America. Ripple is freedom.
The bots
are just freedom scams.
I'd be pretty shocked if Ripple Inc. was like actually bankrolling the XRP army and like the Twitter bots and everything.
I think you shouldn't be shocked. It's definitely happening. Or okay, so maybe, I mean, I don't know who else would spend that money. So I mean, maybe some other whale that's like heavily invested is bankrolling it themselves, but I doubt that.
Yeah, so I think it's possible. Like, you know, there are plenty of third party stakeholders, and nobody even really knows who these stakeholders are.
It's decentralized, you know, scamming.
Could be like running the pump campaigns, but it seems, you know, obviously pretty apparent. Like, especially back in like 2017, it was the XRP like posting and commenting on Twitter was like just absolutely crazy. And you know, I feel like, I don't know, I would be pretty shocked if like Brad Garlinghouse was sitting there like, oh yeah, like let's like run these crazy botting campaigns. But I was also, you know, shocked when I saw like the price supporting and the stuff in the SEC filing where they were like actively like quote unquote trying to like protect investors by supporting the price and like you know, doing these press releases at specific times and whatnot. So, you know,
there's another one where they were paying exchanges for, well, it's referred to as a money transmitter. So I'm not sure who that is or exactly that it's not listed. They were paying them often in XRP, as it was said, to make fake volume so that when they were buying or selling, their volume didn't look like it was a majority of the market. Like, so they were paying to have fake volume put in so that they looked like a smaller portion of the market and to basically have this. Like, I mean, it sounds like in my mind, I haven't seen anything explicit yet about like paying, you know, Twitter army, but I have seen a lot of bots, like particularly like you said, Max, in 2017, holy crap, it was sock puppet accounts left and right.
I can tell you most of the companies that are doing that are not exactly like, they don't exactly have like a website and a, you know, an office building.
What I'd be curious to know is how expensive it is. Like, maybe you have some insight into this, but like, is it expensive to run one of these campaigns?
Because what they're doing would be pretty expensive. I can tell you, in 2017, I was able to charge $20,000 a month just for like less than $20,000 a month got you like less than 10 good Reddit posts with lots of fake comments on them,
like activity and just pumpiness, so like, and all that
good like stuff. So like less than 10 well like heavy Reddit posts full of shills in the popular places for 20,000 and up to $50,000 a month, and that was just for your Reddit campaign. Your Twitter is going to be different. Your Telegram is going to be different.
That's
what I'm doing. I'm not, you know, on the scale of whatever XRP is doing.
How robust would you say that market is?
What do you mean by robust?
Like how prevalent, I guess.
A lot of competition. Yeah, there's a lot of competition there. It's like, it's a huge market. I mean, it was like everybody's doing it basically. If you look, and it's not the case anymore because the ICO hype is gone now, but like at that time, if I went to Reddit, like I'm seeing all my competition. If I go to like any post that you see, like, you know, and this should be obvious to anybody who's done marketing, but if you haven't done marketing, maybe it isn't obvious to you, but like, you know, top four cryptocurrencies that are going to help, you know, create a greener future. that top four list the way that we would do it is usually going to be like three like well-established like name brand things that everybody knows that you're not being paid to promote, and then one little like tiny shitcoin that nobody knows about that you want to look like the other. So that's like an example. And then in
so
the
you're
comments,
like putting it in, you're inserting it in this group.
We make
it's
the
like...
article, we pay somebody to host, we pay a news site to host the article, the four companies that are great, whatever. We pay somebody to host it, we link to it from Reddit, and then in the comments, it's all, oh, wow, this company number four, I've heard of that, super promising, that's going to be big. Like, wow. And then all the people on Reddit go and they read it, they see the article on this news site, and they look at the comments, it's like, oh, what's this coin number four that's being compared? Like, I know these three, but what's this? Like, I don't know what this is. This must be, you know, some hot new thing. And then...
That's so crazy.
It's fascinating how Reddit is, I guess Reddit users are known to have deep pockets, like as far as the marketing like side of things goes, because whenever somebody's like looking to pump a coin, it seems like, you know, Reddit is the place to be.
And also, you know, people will pay you to be 4chan savvy. There's a lot of pockets there. But Ripple is in all of these places, is represented in all of these places, and more than you'd think are being paid to be there. And I know it's like, you know, it almost seems conspiratorial sometimes, thinking like, oh, everybody's paid, but I've literally been, this is one of the reasons why I like to stay anonymous, because there's a lot of, you know, anyway, I've literally been paid by some of the largest mining companies, which I will not say which, in the world, to essentially promote a fork or clone or copy of some coins that may share a mining algo that they don't want to, you know, they want to be promoted or whatever because of their hardware. And part of the job is like basically taking community members from the relevant coins. And I've had people, you know, say in the comments like, this is just, you know, backed by big miners, this isn't, you know, this is fake social media what do you call it,
shilling or sock puppeting,
yeah, this is like all sock puppets, this is paid by big mining, like, you know, it's not real. And I remember this one guy, like everything he said was exactly right, but like obviously like I can't say that. And then he just got downvoted like 50 times and knocked off the page. And like 20 guys told him he's a dumbass, which were all basically being paid by big miners. But yes, he was right. And he'll never know he was right, but he was exactly 100% right. And it was like a surreal moment for me where I'm thinking like, wow. Yeah. Like all those times I probably had those thoughts, I was probably right too. Like maybe. Because this guy is. And he's getting downvoted to hell and like 20 people are telling him he's dumb. And all
like it's all speculation, because you know you don't know whether or not that's happening, but it's like all the incentives are there, particularly for like a mining company, right? Is it to have another coin that is using the hashing algorithm, is that if you can prop that one up, like it would absolutely be beneficial to them to have a secondary use for their coin, or a way to be like, well, when this one becomes unprofitable and the hash rate goes too high on Bitcoin or whatever it is, well, why don't you mine on Bitcoin Cash? It's got the same algorithm. Just switch right over.
You got it. Yeah.
Rid of your mining equipment.
More than with the Bitcoin stuff. More than with the Bitcoin stuff. If you think about some of these other algos that aren't as popular, they make hardware for that, and like if a coin becomes big on that algo, they're gonna sell a bunch of miners. Like the Bitcoin is very saturated, but like other smaller algos, I don't want to be specific about which ones, if you can hype up a coin on those algos, especially like maybe there was a popular coin on that algo but like maybe it's been dying off, so you need like, you know, those miners, like that line of your product is about to be obsolete, you need something for, and also for your own machines, you may have, you know, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars worth of these equipment already. And like, you need something to put them on. So you need like, you know, it's nothing to you to pay. I remember one of our projects, the budget was going to be I'm hoping that none of these guys message me and like, you know, hey, I heard you talking about that. You shouldn't talk about that. Because some of them might listen to your show. But well, let's just say our budget was very big every month. And yeah, and it was nothing to them because like what they stand to make, they've got, you know, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars worth of hardware that they need to point at something. So, you know, spending some money on some PR, basically trying to be like Ripple, is worth it. And Ripple, like I said, is the pioneer of this. Ripple was the one that like indented how to be a really shady market-based shitcoin with no utility. Like they wrote the book on that. They've done it better than anybody else. And they probably were the first customer for many of these services that ended up finding clients with other coins.
Yeah. I mean, their utility is basically to fund their operations. It's just their utility. The utility is to just dump it on other people so that they can make money. And what's funny is that their expenses, like this was about to blow up anyway. In fact, the SEC filing came probably like almost in a sense saved them, because they're going to run out of XRP, except for the fact that I did actually read some articles where they were actually claiming that they needed quantitative easing, which I don't know if that was them trying to prepare to be able to make a whole bunch more XRP for themselves so that they could sell it. I was telling you that I mentioned that their operating expenses back in 2013 and 14 were like $25 million. Well, apparently the last data point that they have is 2018, and their expenses have increased. They've just gotten bigger and more expensive. It's $275 million now. So they're just bleeding money. The only reason they're not bleeding money is because they're selling XRP to people.
This podcast is part of the C-Suite Radio Network, turning the volume up on business.